Hello and welcome to a brief clip from the most recent edition of the Undercut podcast, where Timo and I are reviewing the Chinese Grand Prix. We go on to spend about half an hour talking about Red Bull and the woes they're having with that second seat. Now don't get us wrong, this has nothing to do entirely with Liam Lawson's performance, but more, we think, to do with the mismanagement and mishandling by Red Bull of that seat and the opportunities that it offers and how it presents them to drivers. We figured, given the recent news, that it's actually quite an important piece, so we've clipped it out, repackaged it, and offered it up here. So if you want to hear our thoughts on what's going wrong with that Red Bull seat, listen on. Third place in Constructors is Red Bull. Verstappen qualified fourth, while Lawson qualified P20 and ended up with a pit lane start. Verstappen comes home P4 and Lawson 12th.
We'll do this now or later?
We'll do this now, and I think when we get back to it, I'll just simply sort of add a summative point. I don't think I'll go through it twice, but I feel it's worth doing it now. Let's get it out of the way. Rip the Band-Aid off.
I'll start with Verstappen because that's the easy part. Damage limitation from him across the board, really. He seems quite happy inside the car and out, despite it lacking in performance. He just seems pretty content with everything in life, which is nice to see from a driver where this has historically not often been the case. I think he just knows that he doesn't have anything to prove anymore. He's won four championships in four different manners. He's going to be a dad soon. He doesn't really... He's just happy. He's kind of just playing the team game really well in terms of how he's acting, what he's saying to keep everyone reassured and content both on and off the grid and back at the factory. And a little bit like Hulk in Oz, he just got on and drove and did the best that he could, and he isn't throwing his toys out of the pram if it doesn't go his way. So it's kind of him channeling his Sebastian Vettel from when Vettel went to Ferrari and Aston Martin, but without having to leave Red Bull in order to do it, which is just curious to see.
I'll interject as we're talking about Max Verstappen, and certainly while we're talking about Red Bull at this point, I will agree with you. I think it was a really interesting and unique drive from Max, and it's one showing the level of maturity he's attained over the past few seasons and his sort of understanding as to what he's achieved, what he's earned, and that he can now just sort of revel in his victory and know that even at the moment, he's still second in the championship. It's not all done for. We're two races in. There's still a lot to go.
He's in the third or fourth best car, and he's 8 points off the lead of the championship. And as much as he was joking with Rachel Brooks prior to the Grand Prix, that the only way he can win is if the two cars ahead of him DNF, or three, rather, if he can move Russell. If Russell's there by himself, game on. Because I'd say that driver in that Red Bull against the complete package or more complete package that Russell and Mercedes are, it's still pretty even on that one. And a bit like Antonelli probably winning a race at some point this year, it only needs a situation like that where McLaren are just suddenly on the back foot for whatever reason or just not there for that to be possible. And at that point, he could sneak ahead and be in the lead for a championship for a little bit, which, even if it doesn't last, it just helps to play mind games with everyone else around you because you go, how the hell is he still doing this? He's already done it to you once, Norris. Don't let him do it again.
Yeah, I think there is every reason that Max will win a race this season. I think that's even in even less doubt than Antonelli winning one. And yeah, his performance, the way he's working with the team, the way he's sort of looking at developmental bits, looking at sort of stepping up and sort of being more of a sort of a team player as opposed to just having his own team within Red Bull. He's becoming sort of, or openly people are sort of speaking about him being more part and parcel of the unit, which is really interesting because Verstappen, who's always been Max Verstappen, he arrives on a Sunday, he races and goes away again. And we're seeing this sort of slightly new character that this season's drawing out of him, which is really quite interesting and sort of a positive shift for Red Bull. Meanwhile, I will let you open on the other half of the Red Bull garage.
You're going to have to bear with me for a moment because there's a lot here and I just want to Do it properly because I'm so grumpy, bored shitless already of having to do this every day. So I'd rather just get everything out and then I can just say in future episodes, refer back to this timestamp on this episode and I'll let you know if anything changes on my opinion. So with that in mind, my monologue will start now. We'll go back in time a little bit as the infamous interviewer once started. Ricardo, he spent 2 years at Toro Rosso before moving up to Red Bull, and after Ricciardo left, which he did after 5 years at the team. Red Bull went through Daniel Kvyat, Pierre Gasly, and Alex Albon before settling with a driver outside of their junior program, Sergio Perez, who partnered Max Verstappen. Kvyat was given a season and a half at Red Bull. Gasly was given half a season. Albon was given a season and a half. And midway through 2022, Perez began to drop off in performance. It's measurable up until the inevitable departure. Yuki at that point had only scored 12 points in that year and only 17 the following year, which is hardly good enough to serve a promotion at that point. During their respective times in Toro Rosso, Fiat and Gasly had a number of points, meaning Yuki. Fiat, he was the weakest one, but he got points of 37 and 32 in his last 2 years in Canada. Gasly, he went from 29 to 75 to 110 to 23, but that was a good year for him. And I think he was already also driving with one foot out the door, as it were. And during Gasly's time at the junior team, he only finished outside of the top 10 five times, which includes two DNFs. Albon obviously had about 12 races with Toro Rosso before he made the jump up to Red Bull. He scored 92 points, 105 respectively, and during his time at Red Bull, he only finished outside the top 10 six times, which does include DNF, not counting Austria, because he was still classified there. Perez finished outside the top 20, sorry, finished outside the top 10. That would have been impressive even for him, 20 times during his stint at Red Bull, but that includes 10 retirements, so not too bad on the face of it when you look there, because again, these things could be mechanical, could be someone else taking you out. You're probably not taking yourself out in the majority of these sorts of situations. Ricciardo, meanwhile, he finished outside the top 10 24 times, but 18 of those were DNFs, which is just a fun kind of statistic to throw in there. In 2014 and 2016 combined, of the races that Ricciardo finished, he only finished outside the top 10 once, and it was a P11. In 2018, he only finished outside the top 10 because he DNF'd. The rest of the time, he was in the top 10. So that's the history and expectation that Tsunoda and Lawson are going up against here. So despite qualifying well, because we know he can do it, Tsunoda's only been able to finish fourth once and sixth once, both in 2021. All of the points he scored in his F1 career have been below that. Gasly at that team, he won the Italian Grand Prix and he got on the podium in Baku. Kvyat got on the podium in Germany. Albon never got the chance because he got promoted so damn quickly, but he did finish in the top 10 five times whilst he was at the junior team, and he was just outside the points three times, I think P11 and P12, before he was promoted in his rookie season. Last year was obviously Tsunoda's strongest season since 2021, but in 2023, when Lawson came in for the five Grand Prix, he beat Tsunoda in four of them and scored points in Singapore in a crazy good race for him. Last year, he beat Tsunoda in two Grand Prix and was evenly matched in Qatar. They were one position apart from each other. And that was after having been out of the car for over a year at that point, while Tsunoda had been racing in the same car in the entire interim. Lawson did all this without time in a Red Bull car, because as much as we always go on about how there's the obvious linkage there, they are two fundamentally different cars, and they kind of make a very clear point of that. I mean, you go back to testing, I can't remember who the technical director is, but there was an interview with him going, "We've changed this a lot from last year, never mind from the Red Bull, so it's very different this year." And post Chinese Grand Prix, only Colin made an interesting point, which I wanted to latch on to, which was why are Red Bull not following Mercedes' example with Antonelli in terms of the time that they're giving him? Why not put Lawson in an older Red Bull car, not controlled by the cost cap, and work him to the bone, take him to track, throw him around, just do everything you need to do there? Because they've done that with Antonelli at Mercedes, and it's clearly worked. They did it with Lewis, I believe, back when he was at McLaren for the first time. He knew that car obviously well, and guess what? It worked. I don't know why they're not doing that, especially when Verstappen even admits that it's a tricky car to drive, and when the four-time world champion says it's tricky to drive, and you probably should believe him. Tsunoda's qualified fifth and ninth so far this season, but he's failed to score points on either occasion. And in China, Lawson and Hadjar did both finish ahead of him. I know neither of them scored points, but if we're going to look at results, and a lot of people are going to look at just results, then it matters. So while the argument can be made that Minardi, because that's the base word we all know we can associate with the call that team, is good experience, it's a very different car to the Red Bull. And this year's Racing Bulls, as I've said already, is very different to last year's. And it's something where I was interested to see that Ricciardo's test, I was going back in Red Bull in Silverstone versus his performance in Minardi just shows how different they are. And it would have been really interesting if he'd been put in that Red Bull instead of Perez for half a season instead of in the Racing Bulls, because I think we might have had a whole completely different outcome there. But that's a what if podcast for another day. I'm not going to insist on bringing Ricciardo back at this point. And it just highlights why being good in one doesn't mean you'll be good in the other. And I just think two Grand Prix is not enough time to get up to speed with a new team. Because if that were the case, then should we cast out Behrmann, Bortoleto, Hadjar, Sainz, Doohan, Ocon, Ocon, because they've all had mixed results in their first two Grand Prix at a new team? No, it'd be stupid. So it makes a lot of sense to me why Red Bull chose Lawson, and they should stick to their guns. Keep him for the season, because you need a full data set. You get tracks where they've been before, tracks where they haven't, and you get a really interesting map layout. And it's one of the things I really liked about James Bowers was that, and still do, it's not gone anywhere else, with Logan Sargeant, was they gave him plenty of time, hopefully a lot more than other people would have given him, to figure out if there could be an improvement there. I think the argument can be made that Williams has time on their side to afford to do that kind of thing because they're not fighting for a championship. But at the same time, you look at the expectations that I said about earlier with all the previous drivers that have been in Toro Rosso and Red Bull, you need to be sure that you can give that kind of a level. And when you've not been in that car, it's a lot easier to say than it is to actually do. And when Lawson's coming in for small periods of time over 2 years without any other training in the car in the meantime, and he's on the same level and sometimes beating you when you've been there for 4 years, I can understand why you get chosen over the guy that's been there for the 4 years, and why you are going to obviously be comfortable in the team that you're entering your fifth season with when you just know it so damn well. It's kind of like, I'm suspicious to why Lando's so good in McLaren or Charles is so good in Ferrari. Is it because they've been there for donkey's years? Probably helps and something to do with it. So, like I said, it makes a lot of sense to me why Red Bull chose Lawson and why they should keep him there and give him a fighting chance. They only have themselves to blame otherwise for not giving him more time in the car. They could have just done with my point, Bernie's point about getting in the car. And instead, if they don't kind of do that and they keep going through the cycle, then they end up back in the Perez situation in the first place, which, well, he was a massively experienced driver that still struggled in the end. And then you've got an exhausted and broken driver program that previously took years to heal. And I just think that in a week where Eddie Jordan passed away, and who loved and was famous for giving new drivers a chance and advocating for there being more on the grid, especially last year, he was quite vocal about it because there were none. It doesn't come across as treating rookies particularly great like this, and we've got the same problem with Doohan, and we'll get to him later. And I just think if you put Yuki in that car, a Suzuka for a one-off, which is just silly anyway, it's like, what do you do afterwards? You swap them back again. What are you actually going to hope to achieve here? What if he doesn't perform, if he doesn't get minimum 10th, what does that do for him? Is that is he's just essentially buggered immediately. He's done. And what do we do then? We've got to rush Lindblad in into that racing board. We've got to poach Colapinto from somewhere with this random ass rumor that's come out of nowhere. Then Ollie Gurth is suddenly waking up going, oh Christ, I'm nearly up for this in a minute because Lindblad's gone. And then you're in the same situation again. You just go, you not learn anything. Why would you not just take this time now? Verstappen's saying it's a tricky car, develop it. And he said as well, develop the car towards the other drivers and not just me. I can work with this. And I think he genuinely means this one because, like we talked about just now, he doesn't have anything to prove at this point. He's quite content with how things are. He could leave at any time and he doesn't. And we'd all be like, he's still one of the greatest there's been because look at what he's achieved. He's got nothing to prove. So why not just keep Lawson, actually develop a driver for more than 5 minutes before throwing someone else in the car and expecting it to work? None of the other teams do this to this level. And I just wonder after what Ricciardo left in 2018, I think, around that time, 2018, 2019, that sort of period, you think the intervening time within that, they appear to have learned square root of not that much when it comes to developing junior drivers. So stick with Lawson, stick to what you know, stick to your guns. You promoted him for a reason. Yes, it's not been a great couple of weekends for him, but that's not a reason to to Ben and Mark, and you kind of go, well, if we judged everyone by how they start a season, teams, drivers alike, and we then ignore the rest of the season, you'd be ignoring how well McLaren did at the end of last year. And you go, well, that's just a silly way of measuring something, isn't it?
And this is the thing that I overwhelmingly agree with you on the 98% of what you've said. And this is the thing, it's tricky for us to have a discussion because what you said is exactly sort of what I feel. And logically, the argument for Red Bull to stop dicking around makes a huge amount of sense. They've proven nothing by doing this. Well, actually, they've proven something, and it's that it does not give drivers a chance to develop, to get their feet under the table, and to actually prove things. I think that it is worth bearing in mind that the competitiveness of that Minardi Toro Rosso, I think Fernando Alonso called it Toro Rosso at one point across the weekend, that Toro Rosso has been hugely unreliable to try and sort of pin down its sort of competitiveness against the rest of the field. Some seasons it has been like a sort of pure P5 in the championship all day long sort of car, and some years it has been sort of a proper sort of P9 or P8er. So it is tricky to sort of certainly over the past few years give an accurate metric on that, which doesn't help things. But binning off Lawson after two races is by no means an improvement of simply guesswork. And he deserves the time in the seat to get his feet under the table and to sort of prove himself and to get used to that car. Red Bull don't build cars for a driver. This is one of the crucial things. No team goes out there and builds a car for a driver. You have two drivers for a reason. You build a car. It is then up to your drivers to learn how to drive that car. The difference with Red Bull is the fact that Max is an incredibly adaptable driver. You've only got to have a look back at that time for a showcase series of runs. He jumped in, I think it was like a Honda IMSA car, the time that he jumped into a GT3 sports car and was racking up lap times and speed immensely quickly. He is a driver that has an uncanny ability to get in any car and drive it incredibly flat out because he can just adapt to the way that a car drives, a car handles, and how to turn lap time from a car. We've seen the same with drivers like Shane Van Gisbergen when he moved from Aussie Supercars to NASCAR, is what he's in at the moment. And if you watch British Touring Cars and follow anything Jake Hill does, you'll know that he is exactly the same. You can chuck Jake Hill at a car. If you watch him at Goodwood Members Meeting, Festival of Speed, or Revival, he has been thrown at all manner of cars and is perfectly capable of turning an incredible lap time out of something so far removed from what he last drove. So Goodwood, he's usually in some hyper powerful rear wheel drive 1960 sports coupe. Festival of Speed, they chucked him into a shadow car from the old Can-Am series. He can get in anything and turn lap time. That is one of the key definers of a sort of top tier driver. Lewis Hamilton has very much that same ability to put him into a car and away he goes. He is immediately on it. He's immediately able to pin down what makes it quick. Sebastian Vettel, very similar in that ability to get in a car and extract lap time. So this is where we have this idea of, well, every car must have been built for Max Verstappen because he's able to go quickly. No, Max Verstappen is able to go quickly in any car. And the problem is that then starts to mask issues. That's where it starts to bite drivers like Sergio Perez, like Alex Albon, and like we've already started seeing this season, Liam Lawson. So to sort of think that blinkeredly about it, and this isn't an accusation at you, this is an accusation at Red Bull, to think that blinkeredly about it is ridiculous. And you would think that a racing team that is as competent, seemingly, as Red Bull, they would be able to piece that together. Surely they know Max Verstappen well enough as a driver. They've had in that seat since 2016, nearly a decade in that seat. And the amount of press things they've done where they've thrown him in cars where he's proven to be immensely quickly, show runs, this, that, the other, where he's able to simply get in and go. He is a man who eats, sleeps, and breathes motorsport and racing. Look at him when he's doing his sim racing with Gabby Bortoleto. Like the fact that he can just do anything and be quick. This is, while it is great to have that as a team, the problem is trying to find someone who can match that when you don't have a perfect car becomes a stumbling block. That's where the problem arises.
Especially when you don't prepare them for it, which is why I think
Yes.
if you want to put Yuki or Hadjar, for argument's sake, in that Red Bull seat, you don't do it this season. You spend this season with Lawson in there, so you have data, And then you do what I suggested you should have done for Lawson, and what Bernie suggested you should have done for Hadjar and for Sonoda in the meantime, in the summer break, you throw them in there
The
and you get them up
closest
to
equivalent
speed
old
so
chef.
that you can get as close you can get. So then you actually can measure them all and off and away we go. Then the justification for which way or the other actually makes a bit more sense.
Yeah, I can't remember what the numbers were for what Antonelli racked up in previous testing previous cars.
10,000K or something
It
stupid.
was something absurd, and he was doing it at a multitude of different circuits to get a feel for how the car happens at a flat and fast Barcelona for a twisty and tight Red Bull Ring. He was all over the shop. That's Mercedes got a private test at the Red Bull Ring. That is the dedication that you've got to sort of extrapolate from what Mercedes were doing with Antonelli and apply that to what Red Bull should be
Hell,
doing.
you even look at the small amount that Ferrari gave to Lewis at Fiorano and at Barcelona just to help him a little bit, and that's the seven-time champ coming in, never mind a rookie. And you see how much he's still trying to figure things out there. Just makes you go, well, if that's what you're doing for this guy, the arguably greatest of all time, who in that car with that liveries, particularly the white bits, keeps getting me confused with Michael sometimes. Just makes me think why you're not doing it for your young drivers. And the same kind of thing for Alpine. It's you're looking there, you've got these drivers, but how are you going to measure this? You think if you, well, no, we'll get into Alpine here, but whilst we're here, do you think you could throw out Doohan and just put in Colapinto and it's going to be fixed? That's not how that works. You've got to actually develop these drivers. That's why they're called development drivers, test drivers. You can't just go, well, if you did well in Formula 2, you'll be fine here. Yeah, it helps. But it's not a guarantee of anything, and you need to do common sense things like put them in a car and get them around the place. It's why I was kind of intrigued when I was thinking back all over it about Ricciardo and Red Bull, how different that could have been. Because, yeah, it was the same car, it was the car that he was in for 5 seasons, and it's the one he's most used to. And you throw him in a car that's okay, media wise, very similar, but that's not how that works, and then wonder why he's not performing as well. It's just, and okay, admittedly, these cars weren't best for his style of driving anyway. But again, when you're looking for the next Max Verstappen or the next Lewis Hamilton or the next Oscar Piastri, you're going to get through so many people because you're not going to have that natural thing and you're not willing to develop that. And even those drivers will still need time to develop. Verstappen wasn't perfect from the get-go. He was pretty damn good. But, you know, even he will admit that he is a much better driver now than he ever was back then. And that comes through development.
And Red Bull has no excuse for this. They have, for when it comes to testing previous cars that don't fall under the cost cap budget, they have endless reserves of money. Alpine, I can understand it, is a little bit different. It is a smaller team run on a slightly more confined budget. And most of what Jack Doohan's testing work has been previously has been sim work, which is great. But when they're running off of
Well,
a
there's no thing for the real thing.
There is no substitution for the actual thing. But so for Red Bull to have not done this shows that either they don't care or they are for some reason so bloody-mindedly sticking to this idea that Max Verstappen can win the championship with single-handedly, which baffles me. And yeah, my notes that I've written out for Lawson is, with a bit of luck, Suzuka, a track he knows well, should do him some favours. And I genuinely want him to do well. And every time I've got criticism or comment on him, I don't want people to think this is just me slamming the keyboard at Liam Lawson. This is the mistreatment of him by Red Bull, and it is a pattern we are seeing repeated. But at the same time, he had a stonker of a quali lap in Singapore in an RB in 2023. He has this incredible raw talent. It's just not being nurtured appropriately. And I don't know at what point we start making
That's the
excuses
thing, it was the RB, it wasn't the Red Bull.
It was possibly
Different car.
a more approachable car, one he might have been more familiar with, one that might be more suited to his driving style, so required less of that adaptation. There's all manner of things that we don't know because we are neither an engineer for RB or Red Bull, and we are not Liam Lawson. And until we become those three people, we won't really know the answer. Until those three people write a tell-all book, we won't know. So there's a lot of things to piece together. Are we likely to see him swap with Yuki for Japan? As much as the internet seemed to think so, and while I was the only person that predicted they would have to do this season, this was down to the way I think Red Bull treats their drivers. And an engineer at Red Bull has come forward and said, if they're swapping Liam and Yuki, they ought to tell us sometime soon because we haven't made up a steering wheel for Yuki yet. And this is one of the crucial things people forget is you can't just do it like that. You can't just put them in. The amount of work that Lewis Hamilton and Ferrari put together to
get his cockpit and his steering wheel set up ahead of the season was immense. And we are talking hundreds of development hours. So Ferrari could bring in a steering wheel so Lewis Hamilton could start his races with his hand on the top to stop gear and clutch knockdown. So he can have his brake magic button. So he can have controls and dials in the right place. So he can also learn the control patterns for that wheel. There'll possibly be a similarity between an RB and a Red Bull. But at the same time, that's a huge amount of development to ask a company to do in the space of a week and a half. And then it's a huge amount to ask Yuki to go, right, get used to it. You've got three practice sessions and then you're into qualifying. Best of luck, sunshine. At least when it came to Oli
That
Bear.
surprises me that he doesn't fully realize that or not come across that way in the media as has been reported. He just seems up for him. Like, well, on the one hand, yeah, I can understand because you've been chasing that seat for a while, but at the same time, surely you must realize that if you aren't on the money immediately, you're going to look so stupid and you've only got yourself to blame because everyone's going, no, it's a trap. Have you not been watching all of the past seasons where this is clearly a trap? It's a trap door with trap door written on it. Cannot be getting any more obvious.
And at the same time, while that RB is consistently outperforming at least Liam Lawson, you might as well stick there and hope that they eventually learn how to do a strategy and do some race calls and hope the front wing doesn't fall apart. We'll get to RB in due course because there are a lot of problems with that team at the moment as well. But I don't know. I don't think the swap is going to happen. The rumor mill loves to get excited about this, especially because the rumor mill got bored of saying that Colapinto was going to replace Doohan. Then all of a sudden, Colapinto's popped up as potentially being put on loan to Red Bull. That is even more far-fetched. There is a lot of hurdles for Liam Lawson to overcome this season, and I want him to overcome them. He is a good driver. He went to Super
I
Formula.
just want him to get the opportunity for it in the same way that Doohan deserves the opportunity for it. It's
Yeah.
regardless of which way it goes, I don't mind if it goes badly for either of them, as long as they're given the
Get a
opportunity
fair
to
shot.
demonstrate it, because it seems bizarre that you could have drivers like Latifi, Mazepin, and Sargeant be there for at least one season, in two of the cases, multiple seasons, and you would have got multiple seasons of Mazepin. Jesus Christ, I'm glad we avoided that. And yet you wouldn't have to get half a season for these two drivers. And you think, considering that both of them have been away from Formula One as such in different ways, admittedly Lawson has Super Formula but still very different, and Doohan's been kind of hoovering opportunities where he can, the fact that they're even on the pace in the beginning and are not 10 seconds away from everyone else just shows how bloody good they both are, and why you should take the you need to develop them for the entire course of the season. And maybe, I don't know, do what we said earlier and chuck them in an old car and just give them some testing days like other people would do, as should be kind of the expectation.
Oh, I don't get me wrong. I 100% agree with you there. And I know if we asked Martin Valari on this, our sort of tame driver coach, and said, "What is the one way to improve as a driver?" He's going to say seat time. And what do Doohan and Lawson not have compared to some of the others? Seat time. That is the simplest fix. Is just.
Exactly. It's the thing with Bortoleto and Hadjar and Behrmann as well, and Antonelli to an extent. Well, regardless of if he'd had them testing with Mercedes or not, they were all racing in Formula 2 last year. They had this consistent thing there. They had FP1 sessions. Behrmann obviously had some Grand Prix. They have the consistent thing and they keep going. They follow that through. These two, it's kind of like if you throw Felipe Drugovich in there, he's not going to be on it on the go because he's been out of it for a little bit, and it doesn't matter what you're doing elsewhere. If you don't have it consistently enough, it's going to screw you up, and that's what makes Lawson's performances from 23 and 24 with that massive gap between so impressive, because he was just expected to do it and he did. And then, as soon as you throw him in a different car that's related, you go, oh, what's going on here? And you think, would you be criticizing him the same way if he'd gone into a Ferrari or a McLaren? Probably not. So it's interesting that you suddenly do it when it's the Red Bull,
Yeah, and because
just
Red
because
Bull,
of the linkage.
yeah, and Red Bull's known for doing this sort of thing, and because it has that sister team, it sort of feels that it's obliged to do it. And I think Red Bull's almost sort of gilded itself at its own poison chalice, and I don't like what it's done. We'll wrap up talking about them because I think we've mentioned and spoke about Red Bull enough as it is, and I think this is a story that will continue to rumble on. But the BBC's Andrew Benson made a very interesting point earlier, which is given how lowly Red Bull seemingly rate Yuki and how badly they think these moves through, are we likely to see Hadjar moved up to the top team this season instead? Because
It'd be
that's
equally as stupid.
it would be equally as stupid, but at the same time, Yuki,
Wouldn't put it past them.
yeah, I wouldn't put it past them. And equally, if they'd wanted to move Yuki up, they would have put Lawson into that RB for the start of this season. If they wanted to do it,
Well,
they
that's the thing, they never wanted to move Yuki up.
So it's unlikely that if the opportunity or demand for a swap comes, that they will pick Yuki. I think Andrew makes a very good point there. And again, it's one that perfectly highlights the problem with current Red Bull.
It would then open the door for a repeat of history, but instead of Perez, it'd be Hülkenberg going to Red Bull, and we'd finally see him get to win a few races. So there is a silver lining to that one, because they'd have exhausted all the junior drivers again and go, oh, how did this happen? And everyone's going, really, guys? Really? But also Hulk, so
Yeah, Hülkenberg podium, or we'll wait and see.